three Apollo astronauts were 18 months dead, and the entire lunar project was flailing at best, failing at worst. Most people believed that if American astronauts reached the moon at all, they wouldn't get there for years. Still, Borman had his mission, and he and his crew had their ship. And today, they were inside it, running their flight drills and doing their best to get the feel of the machine. All of the Apollos looked the same and were laid out the same way, but spacecraft were like aircraft. Pilots could feel their differences in the give of a seat or the grind of a dial or the stickiness of a switch that had a bit more resistance than it should. Each spacecraft was as particular to each astronaut who flew it as a favorite mitt is to a catcher, and you had best know your ship well before you took it into space. Now, as Borman, Lovell, and Anders lay in their assigned seats in their small cockpit, working to achieve that flyer's familiarity, a technician popped his head through the hatch. "Colonel, there's a phone call for you," he said to Borman. "Can you take a message?" Borman asked, annoyed at the interruption. "No, sir, it's Mr. Slayton. He says he has to talk to you." Borman groaned. Slayton was Deke Slayton, the head of the astronaut office and the man who made the crew selections and assigned all of the men to their flights. That power came with the understanding that he could always un-